This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the traveling circus. It's not flying, but we do take boats occasionally. That is the Formation Lab. My name is Luke. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in thievery, and that is Tim. Timoteo, how be ye today?
Oh, I am saddened with the memories of the Motorsport Marauder, which was, I think, me and Luke just punchy and trying to have a good time. I think we were about to hit COVID. And
we took a boat everywhere. Us just being like, you know, be dumb.
Yeah, you know, it'd be stupid. And then we had a boat all of a sudden, you know, because we're true fans of the radio as a medium. And sometimes we can try to fool you.
Yeah, we call that theater of the mind in the business.
Exactly.
That's a real thing. We call it theater of the mind.
Exactly. It is the theater of the mind, and it is quite fun. Did cause widespread panic, but we are not Oscar Wilde. We are not doing the War of the Worlds. Instead, we are doing the War of the Motors, and the Motorsport Marauder was a fun way to bring you guys some pirate radio type stuff. So we had fun with that. But we had to sink her. She's gone. Sorry about that, guys. The maintenance was getting too big anyway.
She really was. I couldn't afford the gas bill anymore, you know? You thought automotive gas was bad.
I was just going to say, monetarily or creatively, I don't think we had any more gas for that particular gag. I think we were just like, now what?
The bit ran its course and we're like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I think we were like artificially filling ponds near tracks. Some dumb stuff
We would literally get in. We literally get into the like a recording session and be like, right, what's the nearest body of water to Silverstone? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like we're on the River Thames. What are we doing in London? That's just, we are in the wrong place. It was so stupid. But it was so fun at the same time. Like that was genuinely like it was fun to walk into the studio and be like, all right, I got one. And come up with our silly
adventures. How do we know I think my favorite is how do we know we're in Spain? Fernando! Like, and I put the crowd like just cheering. It's like, yeah, we're in Spain. All right. Yep. That's it.
It was stuff like that. If you do want us to bring back bits like that, please let us know. Go after Luke on Twitter. Cause I'm not on there anymore. Cause I deleted it. Cause I don't like the security risk it poses now.
That's fair. At the Formation Lab 101, formationlab@gmail.com. You can find us there. Tim, you know, we've plotted around it a little bit, and I got to say, I'm surprised we haven't even got into this yet. I mean, I just got to say, Tim, this was a fantastically entertaining week of racing, and it did contain fantastic racing, and it also contained awful racing, but a still entertaining race. I watched two races, and they were two... Like, I'm not saying they were God-tier races, but they were two solidly entertaining races for completely different reasons.
We should qualify.
Yeah.
One was great entertainment because it was great racing. Uh-huh. The other was just great entertainment.
Because it was full NASCAR-level crap show.
It was fantastic because it was chaotic, not because it was artful in the way that the first one was. But unfortunately, due to work schedules and family schedules and life, I was not able to watch the artful one. I watched the shit show.
You chose poorly.
Oh God, so poorly. I was like, why are we whinging about these things? But gone are the days of 2011 back in my heyday when we just got on with it. In Canada, go back and watch it, everybody. I promise you'll thank me later. I watched the other one. We'll talk about that one later. What I'd actually like is for you to give me your elevator pitch, your 3-point curveball as to why I should go on a Peacock and watch the IndyCar race down at Texas Motor Speedway. Because I watched the qualifying, I wasn't able to catch the race itself. But I would love to hear the Luke Clevenger, not old man rant, but
the elevator pitch.
Man pitch.
The five minute pitch. Okay.
Yes.
All right. The tight five. All right. Point one.
By the way, elevators are 15 seconds, not 5 minutes.
Well, tight five is a comedy thing. It's all of your best You're ruining my pitch, Tim. You're ruining my pitch. Tim, sidebar. I'm trying to be really, I'm trying to like professionally, you know, the pitch a race here, and you're just you're ruining it.
Did you hear the bit about Dave Chappelle and when he was told to do a tight 10? he went down to the Comedy Cellar or the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles. And he goes on to do his thing. And the stage manager says, hey, listen, I need you to do a tight 10 because Dane Cook is coming. And Dane Cook was kind of fashionable at the time. And, so he was like, what? And he goes, it's Dave Chappelle, like comedy royalty.
Oh, yeah. And Dane Cook's coming. Ooh.
Exactly. And so, but he's being asked to give this tight 10. So he says, okay, I'll do it. He goes out and he gives a tight 10. He does exactly as he says he will. And the crowd, it is a packed house. The Laugh Factory is standing room only. And he says, and he looks at the crowd, he goes, you know what, guys, fuck it. You know, my set is done, but I don't really have anything else to do. I had some different plans tonight. But you know, I'm going to hang out in the parking lot. If anybody wants to come out and like hang out with me, maybe, you know, have a few drinks and have a few smokes and a few laughs. And the entire place clears out, leaving no one for Dane Cook. And so Dave Chappelle handed the mic back. He goes, there's your tight 10. So anyway, that's a fun story about a tight 10.
Fun story. Okay. All right. So IndyCar.
Or a tight 5. Give me your pitch.
Elevator pitch. All right. 3 points.
You brought Tim, it back.
Point number one. Does the words Texas is back mean anything to you? Okay, what have we been screaming for the last, like, I don't know, 3-4 years, it seems like?
Well, I do know that that's what the Dallas Cowboys fans tell me every year. So, you know, allow me to have some doubt. Texas man says Texas back. Mm.
We have been screaming for the last, like, 4-5 years for Texas Motor Speedway to please, for the love of all things holy, Produce good racing again, please. And it hasn't until this year. This was vintage Texas. This was, to me, a top three race at Texas all time. And it is up there with the oval, non-Indy 500 oval greats in IndyCar. Tim, as someone who watched the Formula One race on Sunday, how do you feel about a potential, I don't know, six sky battle for first?
Well, my assumption would be that I would actually, if I heard a six way battle for first in Formula One, I would think that something like Baku was happening and that crashes were just wild and everywhere. I would not think that it was an artful six man battle.
And you'd be wrong, because while there were cautions, as there tend to be on IndyCar and ovals, they came from pretty far back in the pack. They came, I don't know, like every 30 or so. Like, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is a crap show. Like, the top six, and especially Joseph Newgarden, Pato O'Ward, Palou, Malukas, were so respectful and so, like, the top two. And I won't spoil it right now in the podcast. The top two literally had a thing afterwards where they shook hands and said, man, that was a damn fun battle. How does top six battle for like 100 straight laps sound to you?
I'm giving what I can only describe as the Robert De Niro frowning shit nod in agreement. Like, you know what? That does sound pretty doggone good. I like that. I like that a lot. Yep.
How does 100 straight laps of that sound?
That sounds like heaven for those of us who enjoy racing.
How does multi-lane oval racing sound? We're talking passes on the outside, passes on the inside, like watching
two,
guys.
Two wide, three wide.
We're talking guys, you know, it living and dying by the car, by the fuel number, having to carefully balance their tire wear and their pushing with their hitting their fuel number while also realizing that they are in a four-way battle for first place and they cannot afford to wane right now. We're talking pit strategies that they got just slightly wrong, ruining their entire masterfully, artfully done race. We're talking at one point, a guy led by literally a lap the entire field. And by the end of it, everybody, let's see, the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys were within 1.2 seconds, roughly. We're talking that the top two guys were, you know, within a second of each other the entire time. We're talking 1, 2, 3 people. Yeah, 3 guys with double-digit laps led.
That shit is B-A-N-A-N-A-S, bananas.
Yes.
That is awesome. I would love to see that. All right, you sold me. You sold me. That's too good. I'm sorry. Go see IndyCar this weekend, everybody.
Gosh, don't get like no.
If you need a replay this week, or this upcoming weekend, do that.
If you want just a good race, that's where it is, man. Like I cannot describe to you how stoked I am for Indy, because there's another super speedway. The kit this year just looks like chef's kiss. It's 10 out of 10. It's Michelin star reviewed. Put it on Zagat, you know? It's great.
I don't know what a Zagat is.
It's a food review website. We're talking like one of the guys would have been one of the biggest stories in racing, that he was up in the front trying to battle with 100 to go. I like, this is just Tim, I'm going to say it right now. This might be the best IndyCar race. To me, I don't know how it could get much better than that. That might be the best race of 2023 in either open wheel series, major open wheel series. This might be the best IndyCar race in a couple of years.
That's high praise.
I would say at least the best oval since Elio Castroneves won the Indy 500. So, and it honestly might be a better pure race than that. Elio was just a masterclass, but we're talking like 1-2, man. This was a thrill. It was a joy to watch. Like, grinning on my face the whole time. I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to check that out.
Five stars.
Yep.
Let's talk about the other entertaining race. Tim, I think I've said it on this podcast where, like, every season you get a really special kind of race. Okay. Sometimes that special kind of race, you get one race that's special because of how competitive it is. And that's what we got with IndyCar at Texas Motor Speedway. It's back, baby. Go watch it.
Okay.
Yes. At other times you get a race that is such a spectacular crap show that you can't peel your eyes off of how wonderfully idiotic the whole proceeding is. And it's not idiotic because of any like decision. It's just idiotic because sometimes natures are like races are like dogs, and they just get the zoomies and need to be stupid for like 2 hours. And that was the energy that Australia gave us. And it was special to watch, but good Lord, I don't want to watch an entire season of Australia's. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was super entertaining. Don't give it to me again in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I think I texted you guys when I was 10 laps out from the end. And I'm like, there's still like 2 hours on this clock on this recording, because I didn't get to watch it live because I can't stay up that late. Sorry, guys, I'm old.
It started at midnight where we went for the record.
I can't do that. No chance. Not no way, no how.
Especially not when Formula One like conditions us to wake up at 7 a.m. anyway. So
right. And you know, that's my natural rhythm, so it works. But no, I started it and the first red flag, I know that some people were chafing at it because it was just in the gravel pit. But I did really like that the FIA made this call to red flag the session when a tractor was out on track.
Yes.
And then to clean up the debris from, you know, the kitty litter that had gotten on the track, which would have kicked up and been a lot more damaging than I guess that a lot of pundits were letting on.
And beyond, by the way, I just want to say beyond the tractor too, I don't like seeing, even if it's under safety car, like live people come out on the track, run out, pick it up, run out, pick it up, and have to play hops, like have to play hot potato with when the cars are nearby or not. Like, I'm like, that just seems silly considering that under the safety car, they're still doing like race pace for most other series.
Yeah.
But anyway, I liked that call. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And before that call, we got to see something interesting. Lewis Hamilton overtaking Max Verstappen into turn one.
Off just nothing but a good launch and merit.
Exactly. Like, it was a merit-based thing. He did not force Max wide. They were both kind of respectful. But Max went on whinging about it during the red flag session, saying it was not fair. He did not give me enough room. It's always this way with this guy. And
Totally fine.
It did look totally fine. Nothing was wrong with that pass.
I don't know what a pass looks like if that's unacceptable. Like, I don't know what functionally a pass is at that point.
You know, it's interesting. Max seems to have a massive problem with Lewis Hamilton, not as a racing driver, but as a person. And man, what could possibly be the difference between Lewis and all the other people he's respectful to? What is that difference?
We'll let the audience figure that one out.
I would also see his father, Jos Verstappen's comments he's made about people who
are similar to Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Also helpful to note that Max Verstappen is dating the daughter of one Nelson Piquet, who just got a handsome 750.
Has some interesting opinions when it comes to
one that Lewis. He got fined 750,000 pounds for.
Yeah. Interesting that. He's an interesting character.
Yeah, Max has some interesting people in his orbit.
But he
took umbrage. But I don't care because it was a super clean pass, and let's be honest, the old champ mugged the kid. And it was great, and I loved it.
The thing that gets me about that is, like, Max, he demands all of the space in the world when he's both being passed and when he's passed. If the cars were swapped and he made that pass, he would actually probably end up complaining that Lewis didn't give him enough room to go by and that he should have surrendered more effectively.
Yep.
When you're being passed, you want 70% of the track, and when you're passing, you want 70% of the track.
At all times, you must have like 3/4 of the entire track to yourself. Yeah. And no one has to do anything. You can move once or twice.
Also,
it's not like a rule has been made about your terrible driving style now by the FIA, but whatever.
Also hot take, but if you're complaining about not having space on literally corner bleeping one of a race, I don't know what to tell you other than find a new slant, because nobody ever has any space there.
No. And we are well and truly off the race at this point. I think the last thing I would want to say is, this is my big thing. Do you want to hear my big theory?
Before we get there, did you like the second red flag?
I did. Yes. There was no way to not red flag that restart. Ocon and Gasly coming into each other and going into the wall, that red flag.
Well,
that was the third.
Yeah, that was the third. The second one too with Haas.
Yeah, I agreed with that one.
Yeah, I agree with that one too.
I'm happier to see them liberally use the red flag than overly and unwisely use the yellow.
Yeah, and especially the street circuit, when a little bit of damage to the wall can do who knows how much damage later on in the race. And I don't know. I was okay. Tim, let's hear your hot take first, because I have a hot take in store.
I was going to say, so do we want to talk about the finish of the race?
Yeah, I will. Yeah, let's talk about the finish of the race.
Red flag led to the third because the race restart ended up taking out both Alpines. So congrats to the French government for all the money they're losing. And
I mean, let's be honest. It took away, out Gasly, Ocon, DeVries, and Sargeant. DeVries, Sargeant. It took out four cars.
So four cars. Like
a quarter of the field.
A quarter of the field totally gone. Leading into it, because Fernando had been flipped from behind by Carlos Sainz. So they said because the cars did not pass the first DRS zone detection, they did not get out of sector one, that they had to go back to their original starting position at the second restart from the second red flag. So Fernando Alonso was restored to third place when he had dropped well down the order and everything had been kind of bungled. But it more crucially, Carlos Sainz, who was still running a competitive fourth, was penalized 5 seconds. And it was just a crushing blow. He just found himself 12th.
He goes, this is too severe.
It was very severe for a racing incident. I mean, honestly, I didn't see, like, the restoration was, you know, the recompense for the error. And I don't think it was that big of an error. Everybody was driving crazy. I think that's a racing incident. So I think the FIA overstepped there. I thought that was unduly harsh. But I thought that Carlos Sainz cried like a baby. and I could not believe that a grown man was allowing himself to be recorded on air in front of all, like, millions of fans worldwide going,
please, like, please, it, no, it, please,
no. No. It's like, God bless. All right. Like,
You know what he sounds like?
What?
And this is a theme with the Ferrari drivers. I wonder why. He sounded like a man who, like, has had his. Like, have you ever watched, like, a medieval movie and you hear, like, a dude who's been in, like, the torture chamber for, like, freaking 20 years? He's been in the pit of misery and, like, he just has no spirit left. And he's like, please, no, no, please, no. Like the little last bit of hope that he had just went away.
What movies are you watching?
I don't know. Like, he sounds like a man who has been mentally tortured for forever and just immediately folds into, no.
He wants success and he wants to be the Ferrari number one driver really, really bad. And Charles has not proven that he's beyond a shadow of a doubt faster, but he's pretty soundly beaten Carlos. Carlos is desperate for anything at this point.
Just to me, that sounded like the man who has done nothing but had his hopes dashed at Ferrari for, like, coming up on years now.
Yeah, coming up on years, that's rough. But
and just, it's that little additional bit of hope that he didn't realize he had.
Yeah. But the finishing order was Max Verstappen well out in front. Lewis Hamilton coming in a very happy second. And yes. Fernando Alonso getting his third place of the year.
Yep.
So it did not come without controversy. Also, Lewis Hamilton's team was not there to celebrate with him in the paddock. An incident that they explained to worries about theft because the crowd had been allowed to break through security barriers.
Can I pause for a second and just say, what the hell is going on with the Australian organizers?
I don't know. During the last parade lap,
people were, like, on the fence.
They were on the fence. They were on top of the fence, but they were completely on the track.
Was it last year when people were swarming the track, like, while there was still a cool down lap?
Yeah, that was last year.
What is going on? Clamp down. Jeez, like, this is it. There are certain, I'm going to try to not make this sound, like, incorrect, but there are certain places where I'm like Brazil, where, like, the Brazilian race is just chaos all the time with the fans, where I'm like, oh man, that's, but, like, Australia, I'm like, what in the world is going on in Australia? Like,
I don't know, but I do know that they,
like,
had
security. It's like watching Group B footage sometimes. Like,
seriously. But I do know Mercedes had security concerns, so they were there.
Yeah.
Although there is a conspiracy theory that I did see on Reddit.
Oh boy.
And I can't dismiss it out of hand. All of a sudden, Mercedes found themselves a lot quicker this weekend. And they claimed to not have brought any upgrades. But they were going about a second a lap faster than anticipated, or they had been going previously. And everyone's a bit suspicious. And it's funny that they say that they couldn't get there for security reasons, because Aston Martin was there, Red Bull was there. So
you think they did some, do you think maybe their engines smell a little bit like grapefruits?
I think they wanted to hide some stuff. I think those FIA eyes were around. And I think a security issue.
I think the funny thing is that the FIA is probably going to be spotting their eyes on Red Bull too in the future. Not that I think they're doing anything expressly illegal. I don't have anything to base that off accusation off of, but I think I read that when they have the DRS, when Red Bull has DRS and the other team doesn't, that being Mercedes this week, it was like 36 kilometers an hour faster, which is like three times what it normally is. Like, usually that's about a 10 kilometer an hour difference on straights, depending on the straight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like 3.5 times that. I don't know what they did, but I'm sure there's some little loophole we're going to learn about in the next couple months that's going to get closed by summer break. Call me nuts.
I can smell a lot of things on the horizon.
Can't you?
None of it smells good.
Also, I think too that just the rules oversight committee knows that they saw Max Verstappen put up 2 seconds, go from behind Lewis to 2 seconds ahead in like six corners, and they're like, we need to maybe do something about this, because this is bad television.
It is bad television.
I hate that is what it comes down to, but it really is kind of that.
It is. But my theory, what were we calling it?
Hot take?
Hot take. My hot take.
Tinfoil hat moment? What do you want to call it? I don't know.
Is that Max will have a new teammate here soon.
Ooh, one Mr. Initials
one Mr.
DR.
Daniel Ricciardo. I think that's why they brought him in. I think Sergio's win last week has made Max apoplectic with rage. And I think that there's a very strong push. All of a sudden, you know, I know it's his home race, and Daniel is there to get eyeballs into Red Bull and sell some stuff. But he said that his plan for next year is looking quite good now at this point, is what he was quoted as saying. He goes, yeah, it looks good. Return looks good.
Mm-hmm. I know people will say that Checo Perez did just go from last to fifth. Can I be honest with you? Last to fifth drive doesn't impress me like it once does. Like, I expect that.
Yeah, and especially in that Red Bull, but it's a respectable recovery.
Yeah, but it's
drive.
In a Red Bull. If George Russell last week's Mercedes did that, I'd be like, holy cow. But in that Red Bull.
And it's a Red Bull at Australia, which is hard to pass at. So, you know, there is that. And I get that's impressive, but
I think you're right.
He was complaining about the car and things that weren't working correctly.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Christian Horner says, yeah, he's still the guy. He's like, he's lost some stuff, but he's still Daniel. And so it's like, oh, okay. I think Sergio's out. So that's my hot take.
That is, you know what? I will double down on it. Not like to a stupid extent, but I will say that he gets the Alex Albon treatment.
Yeah, I'd say
or
so.
The Pierre Gasly treatment, you know, where it's here's the halfway mark.
You're just not cutting it, even though he absolutely is.
Yeah, the Pierre Gasly.
I think,
see ya.
I think it'll go well. Yeah. But hit me with your hot take.
My hot take, okay, was that I thought this was a well stewarded race, and I thought all of the decisions, despite some of them being harsh or hard or maybe a little harsh, were just in the end correct. I thought that the red flags were a correct call.
I agree.
I have to say that I am okay red flagging a race in order to you know, it make a green flag or at least attempt a green flag finish. That is my IndyCar speaking. But even if it wasn't, I think that that's a cleanup that probably required a red flag. I think that I am totally okay with reverting to the previous grid starting point. And I think that's maybe because I know how those timing systems work in action. I've seen them work. Just because the television has instantaneous timing does not mean that the FIA does. It only becomes official. That's why we have sectors, right? It only becomes official once you pass that sector, and they didn't pass it. So then the question is, where's the last point that we had reliable data? At the start? That's, you know, use it? It's not like they all didn't pass because it was a red flag. Like, if you had to pass someone to get out of the way of a crash, or you had to slow down and someone got around you because of a crash.
Like, no, I mean,
I thought that for as much of a crap show as it was, and for as much as I hate having to sit there and wait for like 10 hours to figure out what the finishing grid was, that's just what it had to do. The whole reason you did, why'd you do that parade lap? Why didn't you just, you know, say that's that? There's not going to be any more racing. Because you have to give a guy like Yuki Tsunoda at least one pass through of a timing system because he finished the race. Pierre Gasly didn't. Simple as can be. Also, you remember back to Detroit last year when Will Power overheated under red flag conditions in the pit lane.
Yeah.
There's no rule that says there's no rule that justifies ending that race short. So you have to run it to its full length. And what that does is it rewards drivers who didn't get in a crash and were able to run the complete race distance. I thought every decision was justifiable.
I thought the time penalty against Carlos was harsh.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's harsh. And I do think there is some debate to be had whether or not, like, if this was a lap 30 penalty, 5-second time penalty, fine, whatever. What was this? Lap 57 time penalty when everyone's going to be finishing under with the knowledge that, because you don't. That decision was made in a vacuum.
You're giving a 5-second time penalty for a cold start lap.
Yeah.
One lap race.
The problem is that was made in a vacuum almost, right? Where it's like, okay, you did this 5 seconds, bam. 99% of the time, that's a fair penalty. All right. Oh, you did that on the race start, but you can make up 5 seconds here, there, serve it in the pits, whatever. That's fine.
And especially when the carnage that you caused, the thing that you caused was reset by what you had already done.
Yeah.
I'm like, eh.
But at the same time, so like, I understand why it was made in a vacuum. I think the conversation is more, do we call penalties in a vacuum, or do we realize that like this is a death sentence for this race? Like that's a death sentence, right? That's the equivalent of slapping on like a 5-lap penalty at the start of the race, you know? So I think there's discussion to be made there. Although I do think it was somewhat justifiable in that, like, it's, you did this penalty anywhere else in the race, 5 seconds, we wouldn't blink at. So
yeah. I think, and they did it before the end of the race.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. But no, I actually completely agree with you. I really like the officiating. I like the calls. The announcers were whinging, but I thought that's a tractor. I have been consistent on this show and indeed everywhere else in my life. If there is a tractor on the track, there shouldn't be Formula One cars. Period.
Yes. Thank you. I'm like,
yeah.
I understand.
Like,
it's hot.
And there were tractors there all three times. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know what you guys are on about.
I was actually taken aback at how sensible it was. I think the one other thing...
I was too. It really was sensible. It's like, this is actually dangerous. And as I saw the tractor, I saw the red flag. I'm like, oh, there it is. Okay, thank God.
It was chaotic, not because of like the officiating. It was chaotic just because some races decide to be a little bitch like that. I will say there are two things that I think people will discuss, which is, do we want to do standing starts or rolling restarts? I'm totally okay with standing restarts. I understand they cause a little bit of chaos, but drive safer. All right. You're never going to win a race in one corner like that, but you sure as heck are going to lose it. It's the classic Indy 500 conundrum, right?
Correct.
Do you know Do you know who finished with points? Yuki Tsunoda, who didn't go for a stupid place. Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon just learned what happened when you get really greedy right off the get-go. And I think the other one too, and we've harped on it, go back into any episode from any race that has a prolonged red flag and you will hear us whinging about it. Why do we still allow significant car alterations during red flags? The race is paused.
Oh, so pause the race. They're bored. Just let it happen. It's a fun time. They all get out there with the ideal stuff and can race head to head. It's fine.
But it I felt bad for my boy George Russell. I'm not gonna act like I'm like the biggest fan, but man, that was tough. I think that was the other one where I was like, I didn't quite like the speed at which it was yellow flag, wait 5 minutes, red flag. But I understand too that like you see it, you wave the yellow, then you go, hold on, boys.
Yeah.
It's hard to forget that there are humans behind this whole thing.
They're just trying to use
their best judgment.
It's the best part. It's always the weakest part in any system, the meat factor.
Yep.
But sir, that is all the news that is fit to peruse on my end of the table.
I'm giving, we'll wrap it up, and I will say I am giving the IndyCar race an A+. I'm giving the Formula One race an A- on entertainment, and like a D+ on actual quality of the racing. C,
I would say
C minus.
I was gonna say it's an overall B for me. Between the racing, the shenanigans, and the race itself.
Yeah, because it was just flat out awful when there wasn't shenanigans happening. But the shenanigans, I can't deny the entertainment.
Yeah, it was there. It wasn't half bad. All is good. I'll check out that IndyCar race. Until next time, I have been Tim.
And I have been Luke, and it's been our pleasure to talk to you. Until next time,
peace.